The Old Curiosity Shop, Volume 2, by Charles Dickens. Narrated by James Harrington. Chapter 37. The single gentleman, among his other peculiarities, and he had a very plentiful stock, of which he every day furnished some new specimen, took a most extraordinary and remarkable interest in the exhibition of Punch. If the sound of a Punch's voice, at ever so remote a distance, reached Bevis Marks, the single gentleman, though in bed and asleep, would start up, and hurrying on his clothes, make for the spot with all speed, and presently return at the head of a long procession of idlers, having in the midst the theater and its proprietors. Straightway, the stage would be set up in front of Mr. Brass's house. The single gentleman would establish himself at the first floor window, and the entertainment would proceed, with all its exciting accompaniments of fife and drum and shout, to the excessive consternation of all sober votaries of business in that silent thoroughfare. It might have been expected that when the play was done, both players and audience would have dispersed. But the epilogue was as bad as the play, for no sooner was the devil dead than the manager of the puppets and his partner were summoned by the single gentleman to his chamber, where they were regaled with strong waters from his private store, and where they held with him long conversations, the purport of which no human being could fathom. But the secret of these discussions was of little importance. It was sufficient to know that while they were proceeding, the concourse without still lingered round the house, that boys beat upon the drum with their fists and imitated Punch with their tender voices, that the office window was rendered opaque by flattened noses and the keyhole of the street door luminous with eyes, that every time the single gentleman or either of his guests was seen at the upper window, or so much as the end of one of their noses was visible, there was a great shout of execration from the excluded mob, who remained howling and yelling and refusing consolation until the exhibitors were delivered up to them to be attended elsewhere. It was sufficient, in short, to know that Bevis Marks was revolutionized by these popular movements, and that peace and quietness fled from its precincts. Nobody was rendered more indignant by these proceedings than Mr. Sampson Brass, who, as he could by no means afford to lose so profitable an inmate, deemed it prudent to pocket his lodger's affront along with his cash, and to annoy the audiences who clustered round his door by such imperfect means of retaliation as were open to him, and which were confined to the trickling down of foul water on their heads from unseen watering pots, pelting them with fragments of tile and mortar from the roof of the house, and bribing the drivers of hackney cabriolets to come suddenly round the corner and dash in among them precipitately. It may, at first sight, be matter of surprise to the thoughtless few that Mr. Brass, being a professional gentleman, should not have legally indicted some party or parties active in the promotion of the nuisance. But they will be good enough to remember that as doctors seldom take their own prescriptions and divines do not always practice what they preach, so lawyers are shy of meddling with the law on their own account, knowing it to be an edged tool of uncertain application, very expensive in the working, and rather remarkable for its properties of close shaving than for its always shaving the right person. "Come," said Mr. Brass one afternoon, "this is 2 days without a Punch. I'm in hopes he has run through them all at last." "Why are you in hopes?" returned Miss Sally. "What harm do they do? Here's a pretty sort of a fellow," cried Brass, laying down his pen in despair. "Now here's an aggravating animal." "Well, what harm do they do?" retorted Sally. "What harm?" cried Brass. "Is it no harm to have a constant hallooing and hooting under one's very nose, distracting one from business, and making one grind one's teeth with vexation? Is it no harm to be blinded and choked up, and have the king's highway stopped with a set of screamers and roarers whose throats must be made of Brass," suggested Mr. Swiveller. "Ah, of brass," said the lawyer, glancing at his clerk, to assure himself that he had suggested the word in good faith and without any sinister intention. "Is that no harm?" The lawyer stopped short in his invective, and listening for a moment, and recognizing the well-known voice, rested his head upon his hand, raised his eyes to the ceiling, and muttered faintly, "There's another!" Up went the single gentleman's window directly. "There's another," repeated Brass. "And if I could get a break and 4 blood horses to cut into the marks when the crowd is at its thickest, I'd give 18 pence and never grudge it." The distant squeak was heard again. The single gentleman's door burst open. He ran violently down the stairs, out into the street, and so past the window, without any hat, towards the quarter whence the sound proceeded, bent, no doubt, upon securing the stranger's services directly. "I wish I only knew who his friends were," muttered Sampson, filling his pocket with papers. "If they just get up a pretty little commission to Lunatico at the Grays and Coffee House."